us to have Charlie Hirari here. Charlie and I have known each other for a long, long time. Big fan, by the way. This moves. And he's a man who needs no introduction. I will tell you one thing. I'm just looking in the Agada today. Someone said a great shot. They said, "Why does the kid steal the Afikoman?" They said the reason the kid steals the Afikoman is sometimes kids have a lot of energy, a lot more than adults. And adults can oftentimes say, "Nah, that can't work, that won't happen, da, 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 we can't do that with Yiddishkeit." And the kids have to show that sometimes they get to steal the stage and say, "No, no, no, we're creative, we're innovative too, and we have the ability to do this." And it takes sometimes a little connivory to convince the adults that we're here, you know, around. Charlie Hirari is going around inspiring adults and teenagers to become innovative, not only in their Judaism, but in business as well. So it's an incredible opportunity for us here at Yeshiva University to have him share those thoughts with us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, of course. Let me just turn off my phone. I apologize. Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Rabbi, the opportunity here. How many of you guys, just to give a sense, are, this is the Innovation Club, like the business club? Is it? Line right place?
Yes.
Not like Psychology 101 or like basket, we're in the right place. What? How many of you guys want to be entrepreneurs? Just by a sense of hand. Like, this is where you guys are going. You're thinking innovation. You don't want to like sort of wait online for some corporate American job. You want to start some cool app that combines social media with GPS and sell it to Google for like $19 billion. Like ways. This is sort of the trend that's happening in a lot of young people, and I think this is awesome. And I think that to the extent in which you allow yourselves now to start to see yourselves as entrepreneurs, when you get to places like college and post-college work, you actually can be a whole bunch of steps in front of most people. A lot of people today are getting the drift that the world has shifted and are seeing it later on in life. Even if you're a doctor in a practice, or you're a lawyer in a firm, or you're a banker in J.P. Morgan, even if you're in like a traditional, normal setting, you're not in the traditional, normal setting. You're supposed to, and you're being thought of, and what they really want from you is for you to be an entrepreneur within a confine. And what would be really cool for you guys, just give me a sense in terms of like grades. How many people are in 12th? 11th? 10th? And 9th? Oh, so it's a really nice mix. With some ninth graders that we have such a bad project there. So ninth graders coming through. That's really good. And what I would love to see you guys do is really see if you take your school, so to speak, your high school, which is traditionally, schools are traditionally sort of structured. You gotta be in places and take certain tests and do certain things and see how much you can actually innovate in a constrained environment, and ultimately see what happens when you actually get out into the real world. What I want to do today is talk about two ideas that I think are maybe the most important two ideas for entrepreneurs. And if you sort of understand these two ideas, it allows you to at least put a framework to how great companies start and to what they're doing to make them the way they are. So what I like to do is even, this is sort of how, sort of I see it, is that I'd like to sort of take a step. We'll start within the world of Torah, we'll make a left turn into science, we'll swing back into sports, and then we'll bring back to business. So that's sort of how my brain works. So we'll just do that sort of 360. We're entering into a really exciting period of time. Because everything in Judaism is not about rituals. We're not just like ritualistic, like we do it because we do religion. It's all nonsense. We don't like do stuff because a long, long, long time ago someone did stuff. It's not that like, there was a time everyone's got out of Egypt, and like for the first time in history, like Jewish mothers didn't think about cooking, they thought about getting out, so they forgot to bake the bread, and so forever we're like suffering with bad bread for you. That's not how it works. Everything that we do is trying to clue us into some energy, some potential that is existing within the service. God is not commemorative, and he's also not like particular, and he's not upset at us when we don't do the right things. What he's doing is he's trying to teach us how to survive and how to thrive in today's day and age, and there are lessons that are universal that apply there and that will apply here. And in terms of holidays, there's so few that I was excited as Pesach, because what we're talking about really is freedom. What we talk about when it comes to entrepreneurship, it's freedom. We always were stuck getting our information from CNN until someone said, hey, my name is Matt Drudge. Why do I get away from somebody else? I am expanding the constraints and creating a new way. We always had to wait for the infinity where the GPS system to tell you that the way you get to YU is through the Van Wyck and then through the Cross Bronx for ways to say, are you joking me? If I can put in social media and people are tweeting on traffic, I can reroute you and get there quicker. There's a constraint. And what entrepreneurship does, what innovation is by definition, is somebody stands up and goes, I know it's always been this way. I know there's always one way. We're going to expand it or better or take it around the bend. Anyone who follows, and you guys, anyone who wants to be an entrepreneur, there's some required reading. You guys all should be reading things like Inc. I don't know if you already are. Inc., Fast Company, and not all of them. Entrepreneur Magazine, Forbes Magazine. You got to, I'm sure they even give it to you. They'll probably give it to you guys for free at this point because they want to get you in. Wall Street Journal is a little more complicated to get around. And some of the stuff is just too technical, but I was just reading the other day at Forbes that in the next 5 years, the big war that's going on today is for your wallet. Right now, PayPal, Google, Apple, Visa, and MasterCard are at war for who's going to control your wallet. Because in the next 5 years, no one's carrying credit cards. You get your smartphones, you go someplace, and boom, it's happening already, 5 years from now, and whoever processes transactions are going to be, I mean, the numbers are insane. And they're competing because what happens today, if I want to get around, if you want to get around, there used to be something that I used to use called cash. It was weird. It was paper, it was green, I had to carry it around. It used to be coins. Now, it's plastic. I don't have to carry cash anymore because I have a little plastic thing wherever I go, I get a swipe. In 5 years from now, plastic. It used to be that in order to learn something, you sit in a chair, and then a guy comes, and then he speaks, and you take notes, and then you write a test. And then all of a sudden, this guy named Khan just changed the model, and then Udemy changed the model, and Coursera changed the model, and in the next 5 years, 10 years from now, when your children are going to be ninth grade, in all likelihood, they may come in for the interaction part between your a Rebbe or a teacher or a mentor when it comes to education. They're going to be looking at boards, and they're going to be holographic. The whole world's going to change. Because there's a way to do something, and then you expand the constraints. So it's awesome. We got a holiday like that. We got a holiday where the whole goal is to figure out how to get out of constraints. In Hebrew, constraint is mitzvah. And the place of constraints is called Mitzrayim. And the one holiday we have where God gives us the clues to how to get out of it is Pesach. So how do you get out of it? So it's amazing. There's one question that I have in there. I did a video on this last year. You would think that the one time we have all year in terms of remembering Pesach is the Seder, right? Sit around, sitting down, the Nafikomen, leaning back, they lean because they leaned in the wine, Masa, why? Because Masa got to lift the bread, we can get out, Mara, why? We're so bitter, oh my gosh, right? Hurry it up, hurry it up, you get back to Israel, stop, I don't want those dark tolerance, save the actual meal, save it. If you think to yourself, when would be the first Seder? What does the Seder do? What does it represent? The anniversary of us leaving Egypt, right? That's where we sit around and say things like, do you remember when we had those bricks? And that's when we had more. When would the first Seder be? Anybody? When's the first Seder? Right? If I'm talking about, if I got married, right? When's my first anniversary? Somebody? The year after I got married. Oh man, I sit down, I watch the video, I can't believe I got so fat in 1 year, holy cow, that was awesome. If you win the hockey championship, when do you have it? When's the anniversary? You get together the next year, you'll sit around in Israel, you go out to the bar, oh my gosh, I can't believe we got the call, I hit the pole, I can't believe hit the pose, we got it, we won, we kissed the cup, it was amazing. The way you experience an anniversary is the year after the anniversary. When was the first Seder? Anybody know when the first Seder was? When was the first ever recorded Seder in Jewish history? When? The 14th of? When did they leave? So when was the first Seder? The night before they left. They had an anniversary party before they got married. How weird is that? They watched the video of their wedding before the wedding. They're kissing the cup and telling all the stories about hitting the post. They didn't even play the hockey championship. That's weird. That's like you're messing with faith. They're actually and they sat around and they ate matzah and maror and they sat around and leaned back like, oh my God, I can't believe it. They didn't even leave Egypt yet and they're already having the anniversary party. What is going on over here? So in 1960, there's a man named Robert Rosenthal was in Harvard University. He had a theory, and this theory, in my opinion, literally shifted the face of the world of psychology and sports for sure, and all level of performance. Back in the 1960s, there was a rule. The rule is, when it comes to your brain, you get what you get, and you don't get upset. You're born this smart, this charismatic, that charismatic. I'm really into creative, I'm not really creative at all. I'm good at math, I'm bad at math, I'm not bad at science. You're this smart. You're just this smart. That was the rule of science. Neuroscience was, you get something and you have a fixed intelligence, and it is your job to navigate through your life within a fixed intelligence. And there was a professor named Rob Rosenthal who said, I don't think that's true. And he conducted an experiment. He went into a school called the Oak Tree School. And he told the teacher that he had created a test that was testing for what's called blooming intelligence. Blooming intelligence is a made-up concept that he made up. He's from Harvard, he can do stuff like this and get away with it. If that happens, he'll be in jail, then he gets a divorce. Different story for a different time. And the idea was that he can tell that no matter what a student is doing, he'll give him a test to know which students are about to explode intellectually. So he goes to this school. He made the whole thing up. No blooming intelligence. No. He goes in, he pulls out six kids randomly, holds them in a room, brings them back in, and tells the teacher, by the way, these six kids tested the highest in the entire class for blooming intelligence. These kids are much more intelligent than you think. She said, really? He goes, I'm from Harvard. She's like, oh, thank you. Made the whole thing up. It was a fake outbreak. He books out for a year. Comes back at the end of the year and goes, I want to see the scores of these kids. These kids, top six scores, English scores, top six scores in the best, because this is English. You know, maybe like she's marking up the essay going, this kid doesn't sound smart, but the Harvard guy thinks it's smart, maybe I'm just my A. Math subjective, you can divide it, you can't divide it. Top six kids in the class. He gives them an IQ test. Remember the IQ test? The lady comes over, you're playing the blocks, right? And he's playing the blocks, and your mom comes in, she goes, how did he do? She's like, you have any other kids? Yeah, you'll be an athlete one day. Right? Remember that conversation? We know how smart you'll be for the rest of your life based on some blocks forever. Remember those guys? So he gives them an IQ test to test the fixed intelligence. And these kids go up on average of 3 to 6 points higher in 1 year. And he's blown away. He comes up with a theory called the Pygmalion effect. Pygmalion is based on a Greek myth. A man who sculptured a statue of a beautiful woman fell in love with the statue. So he went around the whole world looking for anyone as fair and as fine as the statue in which he sculpted, and he found nobody. And he came back to the statue and started to cry that he would never find his true love. And the Greek myths came, the Greek gods came, and they blessed the statue, and she turned into a human being, and they lived happily ever after. The end. And the idea is that we think we live in a world where reality shapes our beliefs. I know how smart I am. I know how good I am. I got it. I know me. I'm this smart, I'm that smart, I'm this funny, I'm that funny, I'm this funny, I'm that funny, I'm this, this, this. We have our whole lives figured out, and then we look out into the world and we shape our beliefs. What's possible based on our reality. And Rosenthal at that moment created a theory that actually takes the same factors and shifts the sequence. Belief, reality doesn't shape beliefs. In truth, beliefs shape reality. And this has been tested a bajillion times since. At all levels. It shapes how you see. There's this great test by a woman named Ellen Langer, who literally took me, guys, don't forget, this is great. I've got to do this for you. You take my class, Principal Success in Michigan University, we do this for like an entire semester. We can spend hours just on this one point. I'll tell you one quick thing, really cool. She took this bunch of guys. You ever go, anyone here, where's the guys with us? Remember when you first went into the psych test? Remember that you go into the guy and you have to read that little thing that goes smaller and smaller and smaller, right? I remember I was looking at it, I didn't want to get glasses, like, you know, I'm going to test it glasses yet. So I'm like, A-E, he's like, okay, A-E, right? Then at the bottom, I'm like, A-A-E-E. He's like, no, I'm like, please don't tell my mom. He's like, yeah, I got to tell you. Remember that? So she takes these guys, she finds a whole group of people that can't read a certain line. She pulls them out, sticks them in a room. And your eyes can't read the line. She walks in, she goes, I'm actually part of a governmental test. Do you want to take part of it? They're like, what do we do? Like, you have to act like fighter pilots. They're like, yeah, totally want to be part of this test. Put on fighter pilot uniforms. Stuck them in simulator F-16s. somehow someone in the company found out about it. So they circulated around the entire company. And everyone like was either interested or whatever. So it ended up working out that we had lunch and money every month open to the company. Anyone's allowed to come, any question you want to ask, I could try answering, hopefully. What? Judaism, spirituality, exactly. So one time I'm giving this class and we had a new intern that showed up.
This has just happened just 2-3 years ago,
maybe about. And his name was Josh. Brand new intern. 6'3", 250, built like an ox. In finance department. Played football in like college or something. So he's sitting in front row and I'm doing my thing. And he's like, nodding, smiling, nodding. And so Josh comes and goes, you know, thank you so much for that, I appreciate it. And I'm like, welcome. So, I was so happy. I just want to thank him. And he said, yes, it looks uncomfortable. He's like, I wanted to know if I can come back to the next one, because I didn't want to say it beforehand, I was uncomfortable, but I'm not Jewish. I'm like, he's like, how do you know? I'm like, Josh, you're 6'3". they don't make us that big. You know what I'm saying? Whatever, the guy's on the field. We represent the guy on the field. We built the field and have all the sponsorship agreements. So like, we don't ever end up in the ring. That's not our people. So he's like, okay, well, yeah, of course it's okay. So he comes back the next week. And we're talking about things that happened in high school that changed your life. And the point was the power of impact. So he says, I want to tell you a story. I said, yeah, you're 6'3", do whatever you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, so he gets up and tells the following story. I'm just 2 minutes, I don't have a lot of time, but it's a great story. He says, I was 6'3 from birth. When I was 3 years old, I was 6'3". Because then I grew up in Texas. Now, what's the religion of Texas? Football, that's it. So when you're 6'3 in like seventh grade, you are the second time. It's at your Messiah. He goes, I walked into high school and they were like drooling right at football. He goes, but I was a pretty mediocre football player. He said, I was winning. I just couldn't, I wasn't a killer. Because my coach just didn't know how to get to me. Because then someone sent him a video of some movie where a coach was inspiring his students, his players, and he used it on me. But what did he do? He goes, here's what he did. It came time for practice. Everyone got around. And he goes, Josh, come here. He goes, come to the goal line, the end zone. Sir. He goes, can you give me a death crawl? He goes, sure, coach. Death crawl is when you crawl with your hands and your feet, but not your knees or your elbows. So it's pain right up. They did it in the practice. He goes, how far can you go? He goes, 20. He goes, can you go to 20? Can you go to the 20? He goes, yeah. He goes, do you give me your word, son, that you're going to the 20? He goes, coach, I'm getting the 20. So let's go. Who's Dan? He goes, 1 second. He goes, Billy's a short kid, probably junior than me. He goes, Billy, come here. He goes, why don't you get on Josh's back? He goes, what? He goes, you told me to give your word. He's like, one thing. He goes, how many more things? This apparently is something like this. How many more things? So the coach comes out, pulls out his pocket, handkerchief, and ties Josh's eye. He blindfolds Josh. He gets down. The whole team's around. He's like, they go, Josh. And he stops going. And he's huffing, and he goes 10 yards. And the coach goes, doing great, Josh, 5 yards. You're doing great, Josh, 5 yards. He goes, 5 yards. And the coach is so. And he's going to the 20. And he goes, doing great, Josh, at the 10. You're going to go, by the way, you're like, you're working out and time slows down. Maybe you've been on a treadmill and you're running like 45 minutes and you're like, what, 45 minutes? Like, 18 seconds? You ever had that? Like, time slows down in space on treadmills and on fast days. Like, you ever had that fast? You're like, oh, it must be 3 o'clock already. Like, it's 105, it was 104. And then, like, everything slows down. So he's going, and then he's like, I can't do it. He goes, you promised me, and he gets to the 30. And he goes, it's 15, Josh. He goes, well, I can't be, I love the 11. He goes, you give me your word. Your word, baby, word, something. Because you negotiate more. And he goes, and he's going, it's the 40. He goes, I'm not there yet, coach. He goes, you're not there. He goes, how could that be? I'm dying. And he goes, give me five more. And he's going, and he collapses. And he goes, I rolled over. And I unhook my blindfold and look up at the sky and I said, coach, I'm your biggest failure. I gave you my word for 20, and I didn't even get to the 20. And the coach said, Josh, good players live at the 20 because you know what? They go to the place where they're comfortable. They go where the reality takes them. Great players, they see the 50. It's going to be painful to get there, but they know I am not stopping. I will crawl, I will fight,
innovation and entrepreneurship has one first threshold problem. You do not see the world based on reality. How it's been has no relevance to your life. How it's been, you see the world based on your beliefs. You see the world based on what's possible. You see the world based on it. But we never did it this way. But that's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. I'm sure you've heard this a million times. You know how long Tom says to create a light bulb? 1,000. No joke, not 1,000. 999 times later, he was like, this is going to never work. And he figured it out. When Walt Disney wanted to get a mortgage for Disneyland, the bank said, are you insane? He went to 300 banks, and they said, you are smoking. On his 303rd bank, he got a mortgage to build Walt Disney. When the Beatles wanted to get a record album, the record company said, no one's listening to your music because rock and roll is on the way out, not on the way in. There isn't one entrepreneur that I've ever met that has said, I have an idea, and the world said, oh, that is brilliant. Here is boatloads of money. It's these crazy individuals, and I'm telling you, it's crazy, that look out in the world and go, the reality doesn't shape me. The way it's been done, who I am, what is possible, doesn't shape what's going to be possible. I know I can get to the 20 because we all live at the 20. We all live in books and schools and tests and exams and I like this for me, not that, every 2 years does this for me, not that for me. I live in this school. I got my whole world. It's like all figured out and I had to be comfortable and uncomfortable during finals, not doing fine. And I get this world up to 20. Entrepreneurs, they will kill, they will stay all night to 50. Because what it takes to be an entrepreneur is one initial skill. Why in the world would God have the Jews have to save the mouth before the Savior? That's where they left. Because in truth, God wasn't worried about them being free by geography. Leaving one desert and moving to the next desert doesn't make somebody free. The Jews had to see it before they lived it. Because beliefs shape reality. God said, sit down and act free. They go, but we're not free. He goes, act free. He goes, but we're not free. He's like, I got it, I'm God. Act free. Lay, relax, meet, matzah, mower. Because if you ever want to be free in your life, just because I move you from like this desert and that desert, it ain't going to happen. You have to actually first, sitting where you are, in all your constraints, see a new way out. The only way you actually carve a space out of your constraints is when you sit in the constraints and see another way out. And believe that you can actually do that. Then when you can actually do this, you will get up tomorrow morning and you're going to walk out and it's not going to be your body that walks out, it'll be your mind. And that's how you can be free forever. So in 2014, when every other nation in the world at the time is dead, we have schools and shuls and speeches about me. Entrepreneurs have one thing in mind. Where are the problems and how can we solve them in a new way? What's bothering you? What do I not like the way something works? When I see a challenge, why is that challenge happening? What are the properties that is causing this? Why am I want to make it that education is engaging. Why am I not engaged? Is it because I'm sitting? Is it because I'm being spoken to? Is it because the material is off? What is it that bothers me? Because I can come up with a way out. And if I can just think about it, where are people suffering? Where has somebody achieved success in area one that I can bring to area two? Where have I heard a story that someone had did something innovative and can I apply that same creativity to these circumstances? Entrepreneurs don't just wake up and go to work and they click into entrepreneur land. There's no entrepreneur land. Entrepreneurs wake up every morning and go, how can I solve problems that we have differently? And as soon as someone says it's never going to happen, real entrepreneurs go, yes. Because I know that it may happen. They see the world differently. when they come alive. When everybody stops at 20, they go to 50. When everyone says, you have, so believe, they believe and they have. The mind of an entrepreneur is not about themselves, and it's not about the money. If you do your own entrepreneurship because you're rich, choose a different profession. Entrepreneurs do not get generated by money. They're generated by one thing. I need to find another way out of a constraint. There's got to be a constraint out there, and I've got to find a way out. And whether it's sitting in a high school and saying, listen, maybe this way is within this one high school to make something better, to make something more exciting, or there are people that are falling. I tell you something, there are people your age that are dropping like flies from our religion. You can't hold them back quick enough. The Jewish people, for God's sake, said you've got a high school kid booking an album as if the building's on fire. Why? Why? I am sitting here now on 9th, 10th, 11th grade. What can I innovate that may change a little bit of that? There are people starving. Forget starving. There are people in convenience. The world is happening so quickly. What problem do I see in the world? People my age. Things that are happening around me. Things that are happening to people that I love. In my class, you do at the end of every semester, you have to come up with a project that's innovative. And these students come up with stuff. My mom, one girl said this, she had a really hard time raising us because she always thought she wasn't there enough. She came up with this whole inter-network of single divorced moms where they could help each other out because if one can't get to the Staples in time, like because she's working, someone else does, and something. And she started this whole community in California. Moms, just from, and we have people in class that are finally saying, like, wait a second, I can change something? And they're coming up with ideas and they're actually working. And my challenge to you, and what it means to be an entrepreneur, honestly, is when you spend your time thinking to yourself, where are their inefficiencies? Where are their constraints? Where are, I had one of the amazing people I forgot. We had this, someone came up with an app for dating. You guys aren't up with this yet. But wait and wait and wait until dating women for marriage. Forget it, women are a whole other species. And like, they use words, they're English, but they're not, it's not man English. We speak two different languages. So, you know, English people say like words that Americans don't say, like, you know, like porch, when they mean flashlight, you know what I'm talking about? So women say words, and men say words, but they're not really English. So when you're dating, you have all these misconceptions. And no joke, it's true. We're together with an app that actually allows you to like put in your questions. Like, this is what happened on the date. And people will answer each other. Like, this is what's going on. Like, you guys did it. I'm like, this is brilliant. Like, I wish I had this now. You know? This is the challenge of an entrepreneur. You know what it starts? It starts now. The guys that are really out there doing stuff, they started four companies in high school, all four of which were dismal failures. But it doesn't matter. Because failure is not an issue. Failure is how an entrepreneur learns a lesson. That's all it is. It's like practice. You have to think this way. You have to start seeing the world this way. When people say, I can't, your eyes pick up and go, why can't you? And you start to ask yourself, what are the properties of I can't? Where can I tinker with something? What has happened when you read about a product that has taken off? Your first question is, how can I use that thinking to this? And when you live your life at the Seder before you walk out of Mitzrayim, you live your life like an entrepreneur. And let me tell you something. More days are harder than that. Because I think, oh, God's help, I've got four or five companies in one right now. Most of the time, words, here's a magic wand. What would life look like? And no joke, vision. And they go up, we would do this, we'd do that, we'd do this, and I could build my new world, I would build this and that. And then when all is said and done, you look down at 3-4 of those things you can actually do right now. It's just that your brain didn't let you think that big. And when you do these things and you visualize and you actually think you can change the world, and you sit down with a bunch of guys and try. And you learn what works and what doesn't work, you learn what's gonna be a failure, what's maybe can actually work, what can I ask my rabbi from, what can I ask the school from, how can I get 2 guys involved? And I go to the universities and I speak to the deans of the business schools and do this together. You start to put things together, and that mentality is how an entrepreneur lives. And then you grow and you grow and then you grow and then you graduate and then you create this company, and then one day Google calls. And then they invite you, you make $1 billion, and they invite you back, and you speak to the students, and you go happily ever after. I'm just kidding. The goal, not much, I'm not just kidding. It happened to you. The truth is, the goal of it all is that you live your life, and when everyone else sees a problem, you see an opportunity. When everyone else sees a roadblock, you just see a platform for greater growth. And so, my brother, that you should live this way, be this way, learn the lessons of Pesach, bring in entrepreneurship. You should be open to have these conversations from Schleimer, Coach, and here you and me. Mm-hmm. I have 2 minutes or no minutes?
I have like 4 minutes. Still about right.
Yeah. Questions, anybody?
Isn't there a lineup at some point where reality should come in and you can understand that maybe this is possible?
Sure. Post-belief. Beliefs shape reality. First you see, and then while you try to implement it, you start adapting to reality. The problem is not reality, the problem is putting it before your beliefs. Yeah, I mean, 100%. You can't operate outside reality. But you have to be driven by something more, and then you put that vision into the world, and then all of a sudden you're like, knock down, and then you get this battle with it, and then what you end up coming out with, usually what way an entrepreneur works, is he has this great, grandiose vision, he comes out in the world, and like, cut, can't do that, cut, and then there's like this left. But this is false. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is brand new. This no one thought of. And reality sort of adapted into. So, yeah, I mean, you need to live in reality, operate in reality, but you just can't let reality drive us. Because no one ever invented anything that was real. Like, the whole beauty of invention is that it's creative. And creative means it doesn't currently exist in the same form. Now, where most innovation comes from, just to let you know, is adaptability. Most people that innovate don't, like, they're not like Thomas Edison. Most people that innovate, they take an idea from here, an idea from, like YouTube was like, they said, I sourced that was like the 50th video sharing platform on the internet. They just took these ideas, and they adapted it, and they changed it, and they did it, and they hit the right time, and then they got bought by Google, and the whole thing changed. But usually when you see people making ideas, they're not creating brand new ideas. They're seeing a problem, and they're focusing on how to fix the problem, and they look over and they go, wait a second. If I did that here, would that work? And they bring it over, and those, and well, that three of them, if I just take one piece, and that, and now suddenly you got something, right? Like that's the idea. Like, if I took video and put a professor behind it, and then took social media and put it underneath, like, can I create an online course? Like, could that work? Well, then, so the idea that you have a problem that you're trying to solve, and then you go back out into the world and you see who's doing what, and you start sort of like, you know, make, like almost like making your salad, that's really where most of the innovation comes from. Guys, rock and roll. We need you. It's true.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great job. Thank you so much.